This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our next guest is 20-something-year-old, and I only say that because this 20-something-year-old is doing some pretty amazing things for such a young man. Charlie Ambler is our guest. He is the creator of The Daily Zen. It's a popular blog and Twitter feed that reaches more than 300,000 engaged fans. Now he's back with The Daily Zen Journal. So he says, ask any happy person you know. Curiosity and playfulness keep us engaged and connected to what matters most. And so he's trying to cultivate what he calls the beginner's mind. When we use our beginner's mind, we're open to observing, laughing, and growing into our best selves. Are you a beginner at the beginner mind? Well, the Daily Zen Journal is for you. Charlie Ambler, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
I am so interested in the genesis of the Daily Zen posting. I've been sent, as I'm sure many of us have over the years, been sent by a friend, you know, check out this Daily Zen. This is a good one. So how did it all come into being?
Well, thank you. That's cool to hear. I'm always interested when people have things to say like that, because kind of for me, it's just been this habitual thing that I've been doing for the past 10 years or so. When I started, it was around the same time that I started meditating, which was right when I started high school. For some reason, I thought it was cool, and I just started meditating. And I found a book of Zen stories and quotations at my grandmother's house. She was always not a student of Eastern philosophy, but she was just very worldly and had lots of books. And excuse me, I should say she is very worldly and has lots of books. But when I was 13, I found this cool book of Zen proverbs, and I thought, oh, this is very intriguing. It was kind of just a type of thinking that I had never encountered before. And so I dove into the book, and then Twitter had just started, and I had sort of been starting to engage with it as a teenager. And I thought, oh, this would be an interesting opportunity to just share some of this stuff that I'm discovering for the first time. And so from there, it kind of just evolved of me sharing lots of quotes and realizing that as I shared them, the following tended to grow. And then once the following reached a certain point a few years in and I wasn't a child anymore, I started having an interest in writing, and I began writing blog posts and began writing my own quotes, so to speak, my own tweets, basically, instead of quoting other people exclusively. And it sort of just snowballed from there. And then since then, it's just been this kind of a hobby and a fun way for me to share my practice with other people and get their feedback and hear their experiences. And I just, for me, it's a lot of my other job is doing work stuff on the internet. And so using the internet for Daily Zen and having it kind of be this open forum for people to share their thoughts on meditation and mindfulness has been a very positive experience for me.
I think a lot of us love the idea of a side gig, and yet many of us just never pursue that side gig. But you, I mean, how
for you? You pursue a lot of side gigs.
Okay, well, that's true. But I don't think I pursue them in the way that Charlie does, where it is just this very consistent, very well known. You have 300,000 or so fans. And I'm just kind of curious about finding the time, how much time you do spend doing it, and also how has it transformed and evolved as technology or social media platforms have?
Sure. My whole existence is a series of side gigs, and then the ones that seem to stick are the ones that I try to develop into things that I spend lots of time doing. And I guess I just kind of got lucky with Daily Zen because when I started, I had no interest in, you know, making any money or even getting any real attention from it. It was kind of just a fun thing. When you're a kid, doing that on the internet is really exciting. And so I feel like I still have that same excitement about it. And I probably put 15 to 20 hours a week, I'd say, into it. Maybe a little less. It depends on the week. The book just came out, so I've been putting a lot more work into it. But you know, I'll sit down and if I have the urge to write, I'll take an hour and I'll write an essay or a blog post or a series of thoughts that I'll then post intermittently as tweets. And, you know, it's kind of just, it's become part of my workflow when I'm doing other things. Like if I want to take a break, I'll do some daily Zen work. And it's a fun way to balance out busy work with, you know, technically I'm working on daily Zen, but it's something I really enjoy. So it's kind of fun to just, you know, pop on every once in a while and write something. Or if I finish meditating, I'll write something. And it's sort of just this natural muscle that I'll flex when I feel so inclined. And I think that's kind of, it's been nice to have that for so long, like sort of as I've grown into an adult, because it makes you realize that you can view side gigs in that way. Like if you do something a little bit each day, even if it's not something that's work related or that's like an endeavor or a project, you know, if you play the piano for 10 to 30 minutes a day for 10 years, you'll be better off than if you hadn't, or if you try to learn a couple words of a new language a day, you know, something like that. So it's helped me learn the power of doing something a little bit each day consistently for a long time.
Charlie, a lot of your pictures, you're holding a cat, so I just have to ask, what's your cat's name? And I'm hoping it's something like Genpo Kitty or something like that.
I wish I could say that. My cat's name is actually Beezus, and she was named by my girlfriend's little sister after Beezus and Ramona. And yeah, she's definitely the... Eckhart Tolle has a quote that he said, all of the Zen masters I've met in my life have been cats, or most of them, or something like that. And she's definitely a Zen master. I think animals provide a very real example of that sort of...
They do. They always have...
...that we're trying to achieve.
They always have that beginner mind.
Yeah. I just got a puppy about 6 months ago, and you realize what a spiritual experience it is watching an animal grow and kind of learn to perceive the world and play and see things, everything's so new. And it's the same thing with a child or, you know, with people in general as we grow. But I think spending time with animals has always been one of my most prized meditative activities, because it just kind of makes you think about things in a simpler and a more playful way.
Yes, it does. Hey, Charlie, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about, you know, things that stick and sort of your side gigs, and you go with the ones that stick, and some do and some don't. And so I've been exposed to Zen from time to time and Buddhist philosophy and different aspects of it. And, you know, I've practiced yoga, I've done periods of meditation, and I think a lot of people are in a similar situation where it kind of comes and goes, and it takes a fair amount to create a practice and to really commit and dedicate, but you don't view it as dedication or commitment. It's something that just sticks. And I'm wondering if you could delve into that a little bit and share with our audience why Zen in particular stuck.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, I'm like most people where I've had periods where it hasn't stuck, and there's been on and off moments of kind of experimentation with other approaches and just, you know, stopping meditation and kind of not focusing on it altogether for like little break periods, which I think is helpful too, because you sort of see, you know, you're kind of doing an A-B test where you see the way your life is with it, the way your life is without it. And after a certain amount of time, I think I sort of just recognized that it brought a very fundamental sort of value to my life. And, you know, reflecting and writing and meditating helps you realize that. And so I think it's the sort of thing, I think a lot of things that are good for us are like that, where if we try to do them as an immediate fix to some sort of problem, it's very hard to cultivate a consistent practice because we're expecting results. But if we give ourselves enough time to see the kind of slow and consistent benefits that occur over, you know, a year of meditating, even 10, 20 minutes a day, or 5 years of doing that, or, you know, the impact of doing yoga twice a week for 5 years or 2 years on your health and on your, you know, mobility and stuff like that. Once people see through actual experience how a specific practice changes them, I think that's when the commitment comes. But I've sort of learned through talking to people over the past few years that, you know, it's really hard to just tell someone, okay, here's this new thing. You have no idea what it's going to do for you, but I want you to do it for 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, and you're just going to do that now forever. And people are like, wait, what? Wait, why? Why am I going to do that? You know, what's the, you can tell me it's going to benefit me, but, you know, how is it going to benefit me? And so I think that the ultimate lesson of Zen, and I think why Zen has specifically stuck for me, is that it's really experience-based, and no one is at the end of the day, no one is telling you what to do. And so the best way to figure out the benefits of a specific practice for you and to sort of fine-tune that practice to bring value into your life is to start slowly and just do it for just long enough to realize the value kind of intuitively. And then I think the commitment just comes naturally after that.
Well, I know there's a real connection there to beginner's mind and allowing yourself to go through those ebbs and flows of something that, you know, sticks for a while and then you take a break. And I can think of something that I do in my life, which is drinking my green glowing smoothie every morning. And I've been doing it for 6 years, and it kind of stuns and shocks me when I frame it in those terms and say, you know, this is something that I didn't really commit to. I just said I'm going to roll with it. And here I am 6 years later, and I'm still doing it. And that's what you're describing. But there are other things that, you know, I just, I mean, I think everybody in their lives are like, how does that happen? How do you make that sort of, how does something that isn't even a commitment become a six-year practice? And there has to be that ability to not beat yourself up over it. And I think you touched on that about, you know, letting it happen instead of forcing it to happen. Are there other parts of your life that have been informed and influenced in that way, that, you know, where your Zen practice has kind of bled out into the rest of your life and been transformative?
I would definitely say so. I think it's sort of one of those things where I've been doing it since a young enough age where I'm sure there's a certain blurred line between where I can know what is sort of the natural part of the way that I encounter the world and then what's been influenced by it. But I think I realized in adulthood, and like I started taking my meditation practice much more seriously in adulthood after I started my own business, because there's something about, and countless people have talked about this, from, you know, really, really successful tech entrepreneurs to, you know, small business owners, that there's a certain discipline and a certain mindfulness of detail, I think, that comes from a long-term meditation practice. And it doesn't necessarily have to be Zen related, but specifically for me, the Zen approach and sort of the cultivation of that beginner's mind and the questioning of my opinions and the questioning of my assumptions about things and the ability to sort of put my ego on the back burner and be willing to commit to unglamorous day-to-day tasks, which is very much a pillar of Zen, I think all of those things have contributed to a much more enjoyable, making running a business a much more enjoyable process, because there's a lot of stuff that is, you kind of just have to decide to make a habit out of, and some of it isn't necessarily fun or entertaining, but it becomes fun through realizing that it's part of the practice and through trying to sort of perfect the little fine tunings and the fine mechanisms of what you're doing. And so that part of things, I think, has definitely been made possible, if not made successful, by the Zen practice.
Well said. If you're just joining us, our guest is Charlie Ambler. He's the creator of Daily Zen, and he's back with the Daily Zen Journal, a creative companion for a beginner's mind. And let's talk about a few of the things that kind of pop out in the journal. Well, one of the things that you mention is write down 10 complaints and then reframe them as jokes on the next page. I love that. And you know, going through the process of creating this journal and creating exercises for the reader, how did you get there? And how does that one in particular help? I do like that.
Lynn, it says 10 complaints. You've got 20 written down already.
Yeah, people will start writing the complaints and they'll just keep going.
Well, and that in and of itself is a Zen practice, bringing awareness to the fact that you're a whiner.
Basically, the process of writing the journal was, it was definitely a learning experience because I had originally pitched a completely different concept for a book, and then we sort of ended up at the topic of writing a journal because something about the interactive experience, I think, lends itself very much to Zen practice. It's kind of like having a teacher there for you to kind of guide you through stuff, and then you can, you know, ask yourself questions and interface with yourself about things. And the real kind of process for writing it was just taking, you know, I used the resources at my disposal, which were countless books, of course, but then also this 10-year archive of all of the different iterations of Daily Zen and all the different ideas. And so I sort of tried to sort out the stuff that had resonated most with people and then took the central themes of that and kind of extrapolated them and figured out, you know, how can I turn these into prompts? How can I turn these into questions? Which quotes will prove useful to people as they go through the journal? And it ended up being really fun because I've done a lot of talking and a lot of writing and a lot of sort of conceptualizing, which interestingly enough is sort of something that, you know, a Zen master would discourage against, the conceptualizing the spiritual experience or, you know, writing it. And so I kind of had to take all of those ideas that I had been generating for the past 10 years and distill them into something that was like a real experience and an actual interactive sort of understanding. And it was really fun because you end up coming up with 1,000 questions, and the few ones that really kind of resonate with you over time end up making it into the book. But it's a fun practice to kind of just, I realized how fun it is to just ask yourself lots of questions and to, if you have an idea or you have an opinion, to reframe it as a question. And then that sort of eventually led to that. If you have a complaint or a qualm about something, or something's bothering you or driving you crazy, then, you know, reframing it with some sort of humorous aspect or kind of reapproaching it from the opposite perspective, I think is a useful practice because it kind of helps us see the frailty of our own opinions and our own beliefs. And, you know, it kind of also helps us put in perspective the both the petty things and the big things that bother us are kind of, those are flexible. They're not set in stone. I think that was kind of the goal there.
Yeah. I'm happy to know that my Zen practice of reframing my complaint about, well, we live in a ski resort town, and so lots of times tourists are wondering which way to go in the middle of the road when they're driving. And I've reframed it where you picture the conversation in that car with, you know, one spouse yelling at the other spouse, go this way, go that way. And you know, the frustration and anxiety that they must be feeling in that car. And it always gives me empathy for them instead of complaining about how they're blocking the road and getting in my way.
Is that before or after you lay on the horn?
I can empathize with that experience because I live in New Orleans. So, you know, constantly a mixture of people in rental cars and then also people kind of just ambling around in the street.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we've all been there. So you talk about enlightenment, and you have the great Zen proverb, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. I love that. And then you talk about how, you know, enlightenment's nothing special. It's just when you experience a pure awareness of the present moment. Meditation helps us bring these moments of enlightenment into consciousness more often. And then the exercise is to write down recent moments of enlightenment. And boy, what, you know, it's the simplicity in here of these exercises that's really so genius, because how often do we consider our moments of enlightenment?
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I think, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's sort of this, and when even for probably the first few years that I was trying to understand some of this stuff, I, you know, enlightenment is this buzzword, and it ends up serving this, it ends up kind of acquiring this religious context of, you know, this supreme state that you're eventually going to achieve, you know, kind of the stereotype in pop culture, I feel like, about Buddhism and about spirituality in general is that there's the enlightened ones, you know, there's the people who've gotten there, who've reached the higher plane. But in Zen, and I think a lot of teachers in other traditions would also say that you're never, it's not this like kind of magical place that you end up at through practicing really hard. You know, it's kind of this, you get these little brief periods of insight and clarity. And there's periods during meditation, for example, when you'll kind of recognize the barrier between your thoughts and your mind sort of dropping down. You know, you're kind of just experiencing the present as it is without anything coming in, without anything going out. It's sort of just this pure experience. And that's what I consider enlightenment to be. And then on top of that, I think those little moments of pure experience, especially when we're attuned to them and when we're practicing regularly, when we're then going about our day-to-day lives, they pop up at certain times and you'll notice yourself, you know, really kind of engaged in the act of living and really immersed in what you're doing. And I know for a lot of people, it comes most commonly during, you know, creative pursuits, whether they're writing or playing an instrument or acting. And then lots of artists and filmmakers and actors and creative people, notable creative people, have sort of talked about that influence of meditation on the influence of their meditation practice on their actual craft. And I just find that really fascinating. I think that's probably the most rewarding part of the practice, is those little spontaneous moments of clarity and realization when you're like, oh, I'm, you know, you're not aware of it at the time necessarily, but you're really just doing life at its fullest, you know. And it's not necessarily something really exciting. It can happen at any time. But it's just this really, really palpable moment of clarity, you know? And that's what I think it is.
Charlie, I know I'm finding myself chuckling a little bit internally, and I think Lynn is too, when we each hear you talk about when you were a child and now that you're an adult. And not, you know, I mean, look, our beginner selves recognize that Zen masters come in at any age and in any form. So I'm not knocking it, but you referenced pop culture, and I'm thinking that because of your age, you may not even be aware of this, but Jon Stewart on The Daily Show used to share every show his moment of Zen, where he was spoofing some aspect of our political situation, political system.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And yeah. I used to love that. And I think Lynn may think that your daily Zen is actually the Jon Stewart daily moment of daily Zen that she was referencing. Because I sort of took that for a while, that here's your moment of Zen, and I would text, you know, funny little things to people every now and then, and I'm sure Lynn was on that list. But that's an example of infusing that humor and, you know, looking at things through a different lens, you know, sharing with us something that's being lampooned, but there's a deeper meaning in it as well. And it was actually a moment of Zen for me oftentimes.
Yeah, totally. I totally think that, you know, in that case, it was aptly named, because there's a long tradition in Zen of using humor and almost not abrasiveness, but sort of an irreverence to reveal some sort of inconsistency or some sort of absurdity. And, you know, good comedy is definitely that. And so there's definitely a lot of overlap. And there's also a lot of comedians who have been outspoken about their love of Zen or their meditation practice, which I find fascinating.
You're in good company. Well, the book is The Daily Zen Journal, A Creative Companion for a Beginner's Mind. And our guest is Charlie Ambler, who is the creator of Daily Zen and not Jon Stewart's moment of Zen.
I'd be a lot richer if I was the creator of Jon Stewart's Daily Zen.
Oh, oh, yes, you would. Oh, yes, you would. Well, Charlie, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great talking to you, and good luck with the journal. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.